The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage. You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
With the stroke of a pen, a devious community organizer from the streets of Chicago wiped out the space program, ended America's dominance in space, and killed 10,000 jobs. With barely a notice in the media. With barely a notice in the media, instead they're showing us the degenerates of Hollywood parading around their disgusting degenerate slut girlfriends on beaches in South Beach. I can't take it anymore. I just cannot tell you what this is doing to me. I feel like the Frenchman standing there with a tear in his eye as the Nazis march down the Champs-Élysées after occupying Paris. I feel as though I am living in occupied territory. In fact, I know the long march that I am talking about is very clear to the left. The long march of Mao Zedong has occurred in the United States of America, and the long march that occurred in communist China has begun had begun a long time ago in this country, and God only knows where this long march ends. If you think it ends with NASA, you're crazy. The tyranny that I am talking about will not end until you are throttled, until even speaking out against this Marxist tyrant will be considered a crime. That's where the long march ends. It's very hard to convince ignoramuses how science works. And some of the spin-offs, of course, are now in our everyday life. But don't tell that to the average pompous left-winger who says, bah, humbug. We never needed that. You see, now you got to understand why Obama, the Marxist tyrant, ended NASA and why he does other such things. You don't understand. This has been on the agenda of the left for at least 40 years. I know what they think. I know what they're about. I know what they've talked about. They will not be happy until the last gun is turned into a hoe. And you are working in a garden, and we can no longer produce food in our own country, and we are importing food from the Ukraine. They will not be happy until we are dependent, that we become like Zimbabwe, where you're kicked off your own land, and your homes are occupied by people on welfare. You think that couldn't happen here under the Marxist tyrant? You think it's impossible? You think it's far-fetched to go from what I'm talking about today to that? Then you're an ignoramus, and you know nothing about history.
Savage.
Call me Speedo, but my real name is Mr. Earl. It is the Savage Nation. We're doing lifestyle questions. Since I am the only person in talk radio qualified to answer questions on any topic, well, let's say the only person foolish enough to try, I will continue to do so. Geithner oversaw largest debt increase of any Treasury Secretary in history, says Matt Drudge. How is he retiring instead of being sent away in an orange jumpsuit? How did they get away with this? Whatever. You got a lifestyle question? I'm Dr. Savage, life coach, and if you're lucky enough to get on this show in this segment, you're going to get $1,000 worth of advice for free. Okay? $1,000, that's what I would charge. You know, if I ever, I'm thinking of actually doing life coach in person or on telephones because I'm a little bored during the day before the show looking at the news. I'm going crazy from it. And I really want to have a one-on-one with people, but I would charge $500 an hour. That's what I would charge. Sacramento, James, welcome to the program.
Yes, I have a question about what's happening with your Cadillac.
Would you like to buy it? It's sitting in my garage, honestly. I drove it 2 weeks ago, the 65 Caddy, the red one that I used. It's been on stage at the Concord Pavilion back in 5 years ago. and it's got 56,000 miles on it. It runs well. You know, it's not a cream puff, but I'm thinking of selling it. I don't have the room for it, and I want to put the money into the Savage Legal Defense Fund because my legal bills are very high. So when you look at a 65 Cadillac, you think of mother, you think of apple pie, you think of America. The glass is thick, the chrome is thick, that kind of thing. Now look what we have today, 1-800-449-8255. Texas, Eric, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, I've got a relationship question. I've got a girl that I've been seeing for a couple of months now. I like her a lot. We have a great time together. I asked her to be my girlfriend, and apparently she's got feelings for somebody else still, and she didn't want to lie to me. Before she moves further with me, she kind of wants to see where that other those feelings for that other guy end up first, and I'm of the thought process that good things come to those who wait. Should I wait for her since I like her so much, or should I just dump her and say, the heck with this and move on?
Well, I don't know the woman, but she's playing a little bit of a game here. Obviously, I don't want to disparage the woman because I don't know her, but she is playing you. Why was she dating you if she still has feelings for another man is the first question that comes to my mind.
Okay.
Do you have an answer to that?
No, I don't.
Well, wait a minute. She was dating you and she was still dating him, or she was dating you and then discovered she still had feelings for the first guy, the other guy?
Well, this is somebody she used to work with, and now he works in another state. You know, she hadn't seen him probably in a couple of months, and so he's literally been out of the picture, but she says she still has feelings.
Right. How old a woman is she?
She'll be 29 on Sunday.
And how old are you?
34.
All right, you're in the right age bracket. Look, nobody would advise you to walk away from somebody you have feelings for. That's number one. But when you say good things come to those who wait, I don't think the world works that way with regard to women in particular. You actually have to capture her emotionally, and I don't think you can do so by simply saying, I'll be here for you as long as it takes. I think she's going to devalue your worth if you put yourself in that position, don't you?
Sure. I agree.
All right. So I would put it to her in a non-confrontational way. My advice would be to sit down and have do you still see each other or not?
Yes.
Well, then sit down and say, you know, you've put me in a quandary. I know you care for me, but you're telling me to wait as long as it takes. And turn it around and say, Barbara, how would you feel if I said that to you? That after these months, I tell you there's another woman I've been holding in the back of my mind and I have feelings for her. You know, how would you feel if you did that to me? If I did that to you, rather. I mean, maybe that would dawn on her what she's doing. She could be a little immature, right?
Sure. I agree.
All right. So the bottom line from my point of view is to just be non-confrontational. You don't want to drive her away. Talk quietly with her and ask her how she would feel if you presented her with the same problem. Take two aspirin and get back to me on Monday. 1-800-449-8255.
Savage.
Life coach or life coaching on the show. It's really very serious for me. New York, WOR. Dave, what's your lifestyle question?
Michael, I'm a business school professor, and I was curious as to what kinds of, based on your experience, what kind of questions would you pose to the students to get them thinking about their lives and their careers? And get
wow. You want to provoke what in them? I'm not quite sure what you're asking.
Well, I want to provoke in them some thought around what I consider life's biggest questions. Who am I? How am I going to measure my life? And so on. I was just curious as to what...
Oh, so you're not just sticking to the business side. You want to turn them into well-rounded individuals as well, correct?
You got it.
Well, that's quite a challenge. I mean, any young person who's going to get an MBA is usually coming into that program from somewhere else, and they're anxious to make money, they're anxious to make more money, and they're anxious to make money, period. I don't know how you're going to reach them on any other level. Do you really think they're going to be interested in the bigger issues?
Well, I think so. I mean, it's going to be a requirement for the course. So they're going to sign up with that understanding.
All right, so you want to bring the ethical side as well, don't you? Isn't that what you're implying? You want them to be ethical business people?
I want them to be ethical. I want them to be well-rounded.
I'll tell you what I would do if I were you and I really wanted to challenge them. I would create two or three scenarios of a business situation where a lot of money could be made, but I'd write it out. A lot of money could be made on the sale of a railroad. Let's say I'm picking something out of the blue, a railroad tracks going. However, if this railroad goes through this area, it wipes out 55 units of housing that the poor live in. And ask them how they would deal with that problem. I mean, you know what I'm saying? You're putting them in a quandary right there. You're challenging their liberalism against their commercial interests, and it's interesting what their answers would be. But I think that would provoke answers, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I certainly think so. I just want them to think beyond the moment, think long-term what their life is going to look like.
Well, there you go. So in other words, it's people, not profits, or is it people and profits, and where is that line drawn?
Yep, that's exactly right. Plus a little.
So I would give them the conflicting question that you could probably easily come up with, because there are so many examples of a good chance to make money that has some social implications that might be quite negative on certain populations, and present them with that conflict and have them answer it. How would they act? Now, I would even raise the stakes on them and say, and it's your first position in a major corporation, and you've been given the job of dealing with the people who are affected. How would you deal with it? Or would you leave the company? You know, I left a scholarship in my first year in graduate school, and I didn't have a dime because the professor said you have to kill the lab rats, and I wouldn't do it. I told you the story. And it's a strange story because I said I'm not going to kill the mice or the rats, whatever they were using. I didn't want to hold them in my hand, stroke them, talk to them, and stick a blade in the back of their head. I didn't want to kill, you know, lab mice. So the SOB fired me. He knew I didn't have a dime. I had nothing. I was in a strange state. It was my $300 a month stipend. I had nothing, nowhere to go. I quit. Well, he fired me, whatever. I went and left and went into another field where I didn't have to kill animals, called botany. And that led me to ethnobotany. That led me to all the islands of the South Seas. And that led me to a very interesting road in my life. In a strange way, you could say it led to radio. I don't know how you can say that, but there was a linkage somehow. It's all part of my fate. Let's put it to you that way. But in other words, hey, if you would say, well, I can't leave the job, I got to kill the mice or I'll lose the money. I walked out on many, many, I'd say there are other cases, and I can't tell them on the air because of legal reasons. I once worked for a corporation, and I couldn't take it anymore. The person that I was reporting to was a monster. Actually, the person I was reporting to was a very nice guy, the CEO. But then they offered me another position to stay in this out-of-state position, and they gave me a very good salary. They gave me shares in the company that were worth about $500,000. The problem was, the minute I signed on to stay on, the CEO's son, who was 22 years old, became my immediate boss, my supervisor. And he was an SOB. I was a grown man, and he wanted to show me how smart he was, even though he was quite shallow. And he started to present things to me that first day. You got to do this. You got to do that. You're going to report to me. You're going to do that. I walked into the CEO's office a day after I had accepted the position, and I said, unfortunately, I have to leave the company. He said, but Michael, you just negotiated $500,000 in stock option. Now, I got to tell you, this was 20 years ago. $500,000 was still a lot of money 20 years ago, especially since I had almost nothing at the time. I said, no amount of money is worth working for this child. I'm leaving, and I left. And I came back to California without really anything to fall back upon. And shortly thereafter, I sent out 500 tapes to 500 radio stations with a mocked up tape about a talk show called The Savage Nation. And that led to the career I have today. What I'm saying to you is that if you really have faith in yourself, something good is going to pop up. You don't have to sit there and take it from people who are monsters, who you hate, who are out to hurt you. Believe me, there's always something better. Wisconsin, Max, welcome to the program. What's your question?
Yeah, Dr. Savage, I just got a little, situation here. My parents, after 23 years of marriage, are getting a divorce. My dad is kind of initiating it. It's for financial reasons, and my mom and my two younger brothers are very shook up about it. I'm a 20-year-old kid. I go to college in Minnesota. I got a little, just a little situation, just because I don't know whether I should stay home and, stay supportive of my family there. I'm home for the summer right now, but...
If you stay home, who would you be home with if your folks are getting divorced?
Well, I'd be with my mom. I'd be with my two younger brothers who are both, you know, just getting into high school right now.
All right, so your father's left your mother in essence?
Right, yeah.
Did he leave her for another woman?
We don't know really. We know that it was, he says it's for financial reasons. My mom got in a little bit of credit card debt a while ago, and
Mother's going to be in a lot of an emotional trauma. So as you're the eldest son?
Yes. Yes.
And what would you do in the alternative if you didn't stay home this summer? What would you be doing?
I'd be going back to school, to finish up my junior year of college in Minnesota there. So,
Wait a minute. You cannot leave college. The family is very important, but if you derail your college education as the new head of the family, in essence, you're actually doing your family a disservice. So for their sake, you have to finish your degree.
Right, and that's what they keep telling me. You know, it just feels, I feel really guilty just because, you know, my mom is going through a ton of just like emotional pain.
How far away will you be from your mother?
Like 4.5 hours.
Okay, so you're in the same state?
No, I'm in a different state.
But you can't stay home and hold your mother's hand. It's going to wreck both of you.
Okay, yeah, I have two younger brothers too, you know, who are just kind of going through the same thing. And
so you're afraid that your younger brothers are liable to go a little wild without a strong figure around to control them?
Wait a minute.
Where's your father going? Where's he going to live?
He's just living, you know, he's still living in town here, but, you know, he's just not.
Boy, is he going to take care of the children? Is he going to take care of your brothers?
Well, we don't know yet. He doesn't really communicate with us that much.
Oh, so he's flaked out on the whole family. So that's a very problematic situation. Well, yes, of course there's a conflict that you wouldn't be calling. And of course you're bewildered. And of course you're perplexed. And of course you feel guilty. You think you're putting yourself above your needs above your family's needs. But if you actually analyze it, your going back to school is important for your family because what you make of yourself is going to have an influence upon your mother and your brothers in the short and the long term. You've got to be a role model for them and show that life must go on.
Savage.
President Obama, he signs a law supporting global press freedom, which is very good, called the Daniel Pearl Freedom of the Press Act. Now, here's what I want to ask you. I want to read this to you for a minute. It will shine a brighter spotlight on governments that tolerate or sanction press freedom violation. The law directs the State Department, that's Hillary Clinton, to include in its annual Global Human Rights Report information detailing the state of press freedom and the extent to which governments are supporting or tolerating or are actually involved in violations. In addition, the United States will look at actions governments take to preserve the safety and independence of the media. I agree with everything. It goes on. The Daniel Pearl Freedom of the Press Act requires Hillary Clinton's State Department to include in its assessment such things as direct physical attacks, imprisonment, indirect sources of pressure and censorship by governments, military, intelligence or police forces, criminal groups or armed extremists or rebel groups. Now, you know I was banned in Britain for things that I allegedly said and things I allegedly wrote. Isn't that an indirect source of pressure and censorship by the UK government? Talk Radio Network, which is an independent syndicator. I have no pressures I don't have the pressures that people who syndicate with big companies do, where they have to answer to a lower authority. Indirect sources of pressure and censorship by governments. So therefore, this government, I believe our government, has to intervene on my behalf. President Obama said the law sends a strong message that the U.S. government is paying attention to what other governments do when it comes to a free press. Plain and simple. Okay, Houston, Texas. David, what's on your mind?
Dr. Savage, happy.
You were doing the same kind of show format. And I had called in and basically to get some advice. I was thinking about proposing to my girlfriend. I was kind of telling you, like, the main issue that I was having was, well, I think she can be a little sloppy. She thinks I can be a little too clean. And you had posed one question to me that really just made me think and put everything into perspective. You just said, well, listen, Dave, would she be a good mother? And without, you know, any hesitation, the answer was yes. And so I took your advice, and I called her old man the next week and got his permission. And then we got engaged, and we are getting married in about a month and a half. And my question to you, even though I know the answer, is probably no, but my question to you is, would you like to come to our wedding?
Oh, well, you make a very, very nice offer. Unfortunately, I don't do much traveling these days, but I'll be there in spirit if you'll tell me when and where it is. We'll make sure we'll tell the audience about it. One cautionary note. You made a point about your wife being sloppy and you being a neat freak, correct?
Correct.
And I told you to overlook the little stuff and look at the big picture, which is, will she be a good mother, which you did. However, that does not mean that your fanatic attention to neatness is not going to impact the marriage. It will. It's going to continue to be a problem between the two of you if you let it. So you have to go into it knowing that this little situation is going to be there forever, probably. In other words, don't nitpick her for the sloppiness. You better just be the guy who picks things up.
Hey, I've just come to accept it. I love her just the way she is.
That's it. That's it. Look at the big picture. But again, don't expect her to change now is what I'm saying. That just because you're going to get married, she's suddenly going to become a neat freak. She won't.
Right. Well, I'm not expecting her to. So.
All right. Well, good, good. Another marriage in the Savage Nation. That's beautiful. Savage gave her marital advice and it works. Score one for the Savage Nation, you know. Very, very nice. 1-800-449-8255. Boy, this hour flew by. It really does. Okay, here's a caller. I don't know if I can answer it, but go ahead. Monica on line 7 from Houston. What's on your what's your question?
I needed some help setting the mood with my husband. I have tried everything, and marriage counseling is not in the cards for us right now. It's pretty expensive, so.
Okay, what age bracket are you in?
I'm sorry? I'm 29, what? And he is 26.
You're 29 and you need me to answer to you on how to set the mood?
Imagine, we've only been married for 2 years, and already we just had a son, so maybe it has something to do with...
Oh, wait. How old is the latest baby?
He's a year old.
Okay, so look, men lose interest in wives generally around the time of pregnancy and birth. Let's not mince words about it. Women think that they're more beautiful than ever, and they feel it, but the fact is a lot of men get very conflicted. They don't know whether they're looking at a Madonna or, you know, suddenly the Madonna becomes someone that they don't want to touch. And they feel very conflicted about having sex with somebody who is a mother figure. You understand that, correct?
Yes, yes.
Now, hasn't the marriage counselor told you that?
We haven't gone. I mean, it's pretty expensive. And
all right, so let's forget the marriage counselor. He's not going to tell you anything I didn't just tell you. You've got to sit down with your husband and say, look, whatever, what's his name, Bob? Let's make him Bob, so in case he's listening. Bob, I understand that you don't feel the same way towards me physically as you did in the beginning, but I want you to understand that as the child gets a little older, I'm going to be there for you again. But you got to talk to him about it. Don't walk away from it.
Mm-hmm.
Have you done that yet? Have you confronted the exact issue?
I have. I gained weight after the pregnancy. I had a C-section. So.
All right. Well, okay. So there's another confounding factor, you know. So for me to talk in a vacuum like this without seeing you and seeing the physical problems is also a difficulty. I think you know the answers to your own question. I think you just wanted a vent, correct?
That, and I didn't know if there was anything specifically I should try. I've tried.
Well, I can't give you that kind of, you know, love advice. I mean, I'm not into that. Call Anthony Weiner. He may have some tips.
Savage.
We have a wonderful president in the White House, somebody who we all know in our hearts loves America. We have a first lady who is frugal, who doesn't spend an extra dime of the taxpayers' money. We have a wonderful, wonderful outgoing Secretary of Defense who's done everything he could to make sure America remains strong. We have an attorney general who thinks only of what is patriotic and right for the American people. We have a Treasury Secretary who wants to leave after he's done such a good job for America, after all, he worked for Henry Kissinger for 3 years, and then they put the young boy in charge of the Federal Reserve, and then Kissinger stooge became the head of the Treasury, and now he's going to move on to something else. What could be better? Life is wonderful. That's nonsense. What's not nonsense is identity theft. Someone stealing your credit cards and try to destroy your life? Don't be a victim. Call my advertiser, LifeLock, today. Call LifeLock now at 1-800-LOCK-485. You get 60 risk-free days just for Savage listeners. 1-800-562-5485. Write it down. Call now, 1-800-LOCK-485. Instead of talking about politics on the Savage Nation, we are going to talk about life coach questions. And I've got amazing questions. I'm astounded. By the way, I think this is great radio. I'm taking a chance here. Nobody else in talk radio does it. A, because they can't, and B, because they wouldn't take the chance. But being that I'm the kind of guy I am, I'm doing this kind of show, and I hope you enjoy it. If you'd rather I just talk about right wing, left wing, this wing, that wing, I'm not going to do it right now because you've heard it before. You'll hear it again when the news, when there's an important news story, believe me, I'll do it. Or if you really want to just do news, go to michaelsavage.com. And you can call me on it. I'll tell you what, you can call me on any question or any comment you want on the news that's up on my website. Let's put it to you that way. But in the interim, I'm actually interested in the callers I'm getting. Las Vegas, Kurt, what's your lifestyle question?
Thanks, Dr. Savage. I guess I'm just looking for some advice or to see what you do in my particular situation. Now, I'm 26 years old, and I've been married for pretty much 6 years now with my wife. And I've known her since we were 14, actually. We met in high school. We weren't high school sweethearts, just good friends. And as time gone by, you know, I joined the military, and I'm going to make it a career. I know that in my heart that I love it, and I'm trying to follow in my family's footsteps with it. And
beautiful.
That being said, too, I'm putting myself through college because I want to better myself inside that career and also have something I can do once
fantastic.
I get out after I serve.
Fantastic.
And maturing as I'm getting older and, like, hitting it as hard as I can, my wife, she's just a stay-at-home wife, and she just, I mean, all I ask is please keep the house clean, you know, cook, do whatever you need. You just, you know, just support me at home because I'm going to do all the work. And just put yourself through school. I'll pay for it if we have to. I'll go any
route. But she doesn't want to go to school? She doesn't even want to do that?
No. Honestly, we had the same exact classes this past semester, and it's a long story, but because of what she pulled, she decided to drop out, although I was ahead of her in the classes, and I was basically giving her the work, like, this is all you have to do.
Wait. Why did she drop out of school?
She just said she couldn't handle it, because, well, we have a son at home, and he's a special needs child, but she said
oh.
Handle anything with having.
All right, so she's a little overwhelmed from the special needs situation.
Yeah.
As someone who had a brother, which I did, I don't know if you know, I had a brother who was born what they called brain damaged in those days. It seriously affects the other children. It affects the mother most profoundly, but it also affects the father profoundly. So you got to cut her some slack here. You know, she's filled with conflicts because both mother and father feel that they're somewhat at fault. And the guilt with regard to a special needs child is something that is never, ever discussed so far as I know. Yes, of course, you should focus on the child's needs, but the parents also have to be dealt with what they're feeling. I mean, you yourself probably have some problems with that, right?
Oh, I definitely do. And the thing is, this isn't our first child. Our first son, he actually passed away because of just a genetic malformation. And we found out through negligence of the doctors when they did genetic testing.
Oh, God, what a mess.
We were both
What a sad, sad story. And you still have the heart to want to go into the military despite all of these terrible things that have happened to you?
Oh, yeah, I'm in the military. I've been in for about 4 years now, and I absolutely love it. I love doing my job every
day.
Well,
thank God you have a structure that is bigger than you, in which you can lose yourself. That is really the most important thing I have heard. But your wife is the problem now, correct?
Yes.
So what is it you'd like me to answer? I don't quite understand which part of this question I can help with at all.
Just with everything, like, weighing down on me, and just I just feel like I have to drag her along. It's not. I don't mean to be harsh about it. I know.
Oh, no, be harsh, because she's not listening to the show, obviously. Is that correct?
No, not at all.
Is she apolitical?
Is she political? No.
No, I'm saying so she is apolitical. She could care less about politics.
Oh, yes, exactly.
Does she know that you're very political?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Does she care about your politics? Does she find you to be too right-wing, too conservative or anything?
I find it bores her, you know, for the majority of it. It's like kind of
yeah, so you don't have that in common. You don't share a common political orientation, which is difficult. So what do you share other than the burden of the tragedies in your between the two of you? Do you share anything else?
We used to have more common interests when we were younger and when we were friends, and and we still seem to share some when we actually first got together. But as time goes by, it's just more and more of it's just dropped off, and it's you know.
How are you doing financially?
Financially, I take care of everything, and I run the house as far as finances.
No, I'm saying, do you have enough money as a member of the military to support your family right now?
Yes, I do. More than enough, actually. I've made some good.
This is an interesting thing because, you know, military personnel are underpaid to begin with. But here you are saying I have more than enough. So you're not a greedy man. You're a very interesting person. You're a very good person. You want to give to the country, and you are giving to the country. You're a good father. You're a good husband. And you feel that your wife is somehow not a drag on you, but you don't know how to motivate her is what you're asking, what you're saying.
Yeah, exactly. I just don't know what to do. I'm like kicking and screaming in the dark, and I've told her that. Like,
and I assume you're calling this radio program because you have no one else to turn to. Is that correct?
I mean, I've talked to family about it, but it's somebody who's not family, not a close friend, just somebody on the outside, just, you know, unbiased opinion, who don't really know either of us and just can hear the situation.
Well, there's no way to kickstart people. You can't come up with some magic idea like bring home a, you know, Barbie doll for her and she's going to react to it. I'm using a metaphor, of course. The problem here is systemic not between the two of you necessarily, but this woman has already, she's lost a child, right? You said you lost a child?
Yes, we have, and we're going to lose it.
Okay.
Second.
Now you have a second child who is developmentally disabled or what?
It's a whole slew. You probably know the terms. Miller-Dieker, lissencephaly.
Oh, God, you're a poor God. It's terrible. Terrible suffering. You've got to understand your wife is suffering. She's in very deep pain, and I'm sure you do know that, correct?
Oh, yes. Yes, I do.
So you're afraid that if you don't do something and you don't intervene, she's going to drift further and further away from you and further away from an active life, and she's going to become a complete vegetable lost to the world is what you fear.
Exactly.
Where is her mother in all of this?
You know, I want her to progress in her life. And
No. Where is your wife's mother in all of this?
Where is she? Actually, another addition to the story is I'm actually slotted to go overseas in 4 days and for a year away from her. So she's with her mom in Florida.
Oh, my God. Is her mom at all helpful?
Oh, yeah, she's very helpful. She's a very, very wonderful woman, definitely.
As someone who's seen what a child who is handicapped does to everyone in the family without knowing, they don't do it. But what having a handicapped child or a developmentally disabled child, the effects upon the mother, the father, the other siblings is overwhelming. And people don't even understand it. And a father like this, who still has the strength to care enough to stay in the military and fight for his country, God bless him. I'll be back.
Savage.
You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
Why doesn't Obama, see, I'd feel much more comfortable if the Democrats would just simply relabel themselves and say, listen, we're going to clear the air. We are a socialist party. We have been a socialist party for a long time. Our president is, even to the left of us, he's a communist, a Marxist, and he's proudly so. And we want you to make a choice between communism and capitalism. The reason they don't do it is because they know the American people would never vote for them again. Because 90% of the American people do not like socialism nor communism. They hate tyranny. We're a people that overthrew the British, our ancestors allegedly did. And now we have a tyrant in the White House who in many ways is as oppressive, if not more so, than the British government was before the revolution of 1776. Why don't you tell that to people who were still in the Soviet gulag? Why don't you tell that to the people who were still in the prison camps in China? Why don't you tell that to the people locked in the dark dungeons of Cuba that the Cold War is over? These people are fools. These people don't even understand the danger they're in. Kathy in New York on WOR. Go ahead, please.
Hello, Mr. Savage. The liberal media has dumbed down American, just like you said. They want to be entertained by the media, not learn anything, the plain truth. And that's too hard, and that's what you give us, and I thank you.
That's all very succinct. I thank you for listening. I don't need the whole country to listen. I don't. I need the people with brains to listen to the show as often as they can. And I really don't expect you to listen, you know, for 3 hours a day. 4 hours a day would be better. You should listen to the whole show and a replay. But having said that, look, there's only so much people can take. It's summertime. Most people are traveling or whatever. They need a break. And I'm telling you that I can. It's not the handwriting on the wall. They've placed him in the White House. And now he's acting like a patriot. It's astounding to me. No, the Cold War is not over at all. It's still going on, by the way. The Soviets and the Chinese are in cahoots, entangling the country. They have many, many people inside the intelligence agencies, inside the executive. We certainly know that they're in the judiciary. How far do you have to go to see them in the judiciary? Some of them are outright naked communists. So you say, well, why do I care? Communist, schmominist. What does it matter to me? How does it affect me? My friends, if you cannot see the tightening noose that Obama has put around America, if you don't feel the noose tightening around your freedoms, then you'll never feel it. And you're hopeless. You actually are a slave. You're a born slave. You're living in slavery because you were born to be a slave. Don't you understand that? If you don't feel the tyranny of Obama, then you are a born slave. And you'll be very happy in slavery. You don't even know what freedom is. You think freedom is choosing a color of a car? You think freedom is choosing a different color shirt or a different boyfriend or girlfriend every night?
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
Why do fools fall in love? Why do birds sing so gay? This kid could hit notes that it was so beautiful. Died at 18 of a drug overdose. Anyway, wherever there's talent, there's tragedy. Welcome to the Savage Nation. Kucinich praises Syrian dictator on Syrian TV. Liberalism is a mental disorder. U.S. puts Israel on terror list. Liberalism is a mental disorder. Obama and Holder demonize the CIA. They're going to go after CIA officers who did some bad things to the terrorists under Bush. Liberalism is a mental disorder. Obama dismisses the fuss about Libya conflict. Liberalism is a mental disorder. Senator Turbin Durbin says illegal alien could be our future president. Liberalism is a mental disorder. Some terrorists and Gitmo who are ready to be released ask to stay in Gitmo rather than go home. And liberals say Gitmo is a bad place. Liberalism is a mental disorder. Poll numbers continue alarming trend for Obama. Can't say that about that. North Korea now heads the UN disarmament panel. Liberalism is a mental disorder. Tax the rich, he yelped, while Michelle enjoyed Africa. Liberalism is a mental disorder. Let's see what else is on the Savage Nation. John Lennon was a closet Reagan fan. Can't say that about that. Bogus breast cancer charity raised $9 million. Liberalism is a mental disorder.
Savage.
Talk radio is still dominant in terms of the world of political ideas in this country. I did it on this show. It was done nowhere else. We kept hearing talk radio is this, talk radio is that. It's only for old people. Talk radio is dead. Cable news is king. Internet is king. I don't say they don't have a powerful influence. You got to be a fool not to say so. At this stage, though, you'd have to admit, no matter how much of a doubting Thomas you are, that Michael Savage has rescued talk radio from the gallows. Talk Radio Network, an independent syndicator. I work with the best team in talk radio. They know me. They're like my friends, all the guys in the back room. It's unbelievable to me. This is a family. This is a team. We are the Yankees of talk radio. If anyone out there has been doubting whether talk radio still is powerful, let me tell you something. It is more powerful today than it ever has been in my 16-year career. Much more powerful today. More listeners than ever. More influence than ever. That's if you're in a ring. If you're in the inner ring, you have an audience that needs you and listens to you. And if you make sense, well, you're gonna make a lot of friends and a lot of unhappy people too. I wouldn't use the word enemies because we don't yet live in North Korea.
Savage.
Chicago Mike on WIND, what's on your mind?
Well, Doc, I need your sociological expertise right here. I'm a baby boomer. I grew up in the 60s, sex, drugs, rock and roll, experienced a lot of things, went to a lot of rock concerts, and now I'm a middle-aged guy with children, and the question is, they're being exposed to drugs and sex and rock and roll, some of the things I did, and I'm kind of curious, how honest, open, forthcoming are you going to be? Would one be? Is it advantageous to be?
No. It's not their business. They don't want to know that you're a wild young kid. It doesn't engender love and trust. In fact, it turns you into a friend, just like some of the other friends who are going to mislead them. I would leave that alone. How old are the children?
In their 20s.
Well, they're not kids anymore, so why is this even coming up?
Well, there's a little guilt going on here. I mean, you know, like... I denied certain things. I acknowledged certain things, you know, some of the more tame.
Right, of course. So stick to them. The more things you can feel comfortable toward. You don't have to tell them about every little thing you did. They don't want to know it, number one. They don't want to see their father in that mental picture because it'll distort them for the rest of their lives. You understand you're not doing them a favor?
Understood.
In other words, okay, honesty is a wonderful thing, but there's a time and a place where you bring up certain things, and there's a time and a place where you keep it to yourself.
What if they bring it up, though, and ask direct questions?
Oh, well, that's another story. So have they brought it up?
Well, certainly not to the specific level, but to the, to the general area.
All right, what, give me an example. Is it the sexual part or the drug part?
Drug part.
Okay, so what are they saying? Dad, did you ever smoke dope?
No, that's the tame part.
I'm sorry, that's what?
The team, you know.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. You were way beyond that. You were really deeply into some heavy things. And, you know, now you're going to go into an area. I don't know that you want to tell him that you did coke or you did, I mean, what'd you do, beyond coke on top of it all?
No. You know, psychedelic things, experiences, natural things, you know.
So you used LSD, but that was very common in the
60s. That's what I'm saying. It was a lifestyle.
So why don't you tell him you used it once in a while and it screwed your mind up and you wish to God you didn't?
Well, there you go.
Well, is that true or are you glad you used LSD?
I'm a responsible adult with a job and a family.
No, I understand that. But looking back on those years, would you recommend your children drop a tab of acid?
Absolutely not. That's a hypocrisy.
Well, why not? Why would you recommend they not do that?
Well, because it provided nothing but potential danger. I mean, nothing good came out.
Well, so tell them that. You could say you used acid. It was the worst thing you ever did in your life. It set you back. You wish to God you could take those years back, and you would never do it because it set you on in areas that you never wanted to go, and it didn't do you any good, and it's all a lie that it opens up your mind. It doesn't open up your mind. It opens up your fears.
Well, thank God I never got into it to any extent like that would imply. But, you know,
well, I mean, there are people walking around Berkeley to this day who are out of their minds because they took too many acid trips. Some of them have become congressmen and senators from Berkeley.
I took my family to San Francisco, and I took them to Haight-Ashbury, and I took them all over those places.
This is the sickest city in the world, not only in America. The people here who run it are amongst the most demented people on the planet. They have no concept how comical they actually are to the rest of the world. And it's all related to drugs, sex, and rock and roll. Okay? I would just say, you know, hold a little bit of your counsel to yourself. The children don't need to know every little detail of your life.
Savage.
Extra, extra, hear all about it. There's no news today. Welcome to the Savage. There's plenty of news. I just read you all the stories on my website, and you're not interested in any of this. Holder okays criminal probe of CIA. Can you imagine we have such a loopy attorney general that he would spend the time now, right up to the election, crucifying CIA officers from the Bush era in an attempt to satisfy the lunatics on the far left? This is what we have for a government now. It's a totally irrational administration. It's irrational from the top to the bottom. Why is the media obsessed with the Casey Anthony case? I don't understand this. I see it and turn it right off. Why are they focusing on one case for 6 months, a year, over and every channel? I don't understand this. I won't cover the story. All right, whatever. Don't call me about it, though, because then you'll make me cover it. Cincinnati, Dan, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hey, thanks very much. It's always a pleasure listening to your show. You got such a great amount of wisdom. Hey, I've got a 3-year-old daughter that is real intelligent, and I'm just curious if you have some ideas and things I could do to help her, expand her knowledge and to learn and grow faster.
Very interesting. Now, you know she's brighter than her peers through... What, just simply through your own observations or through school? The school told you?
She's only 3 years old, so she's not going to daycare or school, but I've got quite a few girls that have come in to watch her. We've got sitters that watch her all day long when we're at work. And,
She's very intelligent. She's highly precocious. And you have to understand that when she goes to school, there are many programs for the dumb. There are many programs for the juvenile delinquent. There are many programs for every type of child except for the bright. You know that in our society. They cater to the dumbest, not to the brightest. I hope you understand that.
Yeah, that's unfortunate, but you're right.
It's unfortunate, right. When I went to school, they had special programs for bright kids to make sure America kept advancing. Now, because we have a backwards view of the universe, they spend all their money on the stupid rather than on the brightest. Troublemakers, they get special attention. You name it. So you as a parent are calling because you already know what to do. I mean, you're reading to her, correct?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. I would think that reading, make believe you're the tutor. So what are you not doing with her that you should be? Do you take her to art museums?
No, we haven't done that lately, but that is something I definitely want to be doing. I've been working.
All right. I would definitely open up her mind to great art. I would take it to the museums. And Cincinnati must have some classical art in one of the museums, I would assume. I'm not familiar with the museums there, but every city, especially a city of that size, would have a decent collection of fine art, correct?
Sure, definitely.
All right, so I would go there. I would think a 3-year-old is not going to need a docent to explain what the painting is, but you can show her through the form and the shape and the color what a great painting is as opposed to, you don't want to compare. She wouldn't understand a comparison. Why don't you just expose it to some great masters to start with?
Yeah, that's a great idea. What are some of the...
All right, so that would be one thing. Then music. Music is very important. Do you have music playing in the house at any time?
Yeah, quite often each day.
What kind of music?
We listen to Christian music and children's music. She enjoys mainly the children's music right now. But
very beautiful. I would expose her to some great classical music, which has been shown to absolutely expand the consciousness of children. Sir, I don't have to tell you with the other side of it what it does to the brains. All you got to do is look at Lindsay Lohan to see where that ends up. That really works out real well to expose a child to that kind of garbage. But I would play... get CDs of some of the, you know, greats, get Bach, get, I don't think that Beethoven is something a 3-year-old can really relate to, truthfully. It may be too heroic for a child to listen to, especially some of his great symphonies. But I would get Chopin and see what she reacts to and try to see if she has any musical talent.
Yeah, we actually just started giving her piano lessons about a month ago. So
now, what about mathematics? There must be some way to increase her mathematical skills. This is an area I don't know anything about in terms of advice, and I would suggest that you, I go to an expert. I go to the internet, frankly. You know, there's a way. The search engines today are so good that if you know what to look for, you can get the answer. Just put in the correct words. So in this case, I would do a search, whether it's the Google or any other search engine, and say, mathematical lessons for the three-year-old. Okay? See what comes up. Okay. See what comes up. It's amazing what might come flying up off the internet.
Yeah. Can I ask you, what were some of the things that you did with your kids that you found really helpful?
Oh, well, see, that's another story. I did almost everything I just told you. I was a big museum goer. I took them to museums. I did not make a big deal out of school other than they had to go to school and they had to do their homework. I never got mad at them if they didn't get an A or something like that. I also took my children I took them out of school in the middle of the year on ocean trips when I was a lecturer at sea, on the understanding that they would do their schoolwork on the ship with me as the tutor. Of course, that didn't always work out. They usually were more interested in running around on the ship and looking at the ocean. But I had felt that the exposure to countries such as Fiji and the people in the islands would do more, for example, for my son than just simply sitting in a classroom, and it sure worked out for him. He's a person who knows how to get along with people all over the world. And I would have to say that the exposure to people of the world helped him with that. So it's not just going to be through school books. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, sure. Hey, I really appreciate your advice. And like I said, you're one of the wisest people I've ever heard talk. And it's just a blast listening to you.
That's beautiful. Let me send you a gift. I'm going to send you a free copy of Healing Children Naturally if you'll give us your email, because I think diet is something so important, especially for young children, and it's often overlooked. This is the Savage Nation. If you have a life coach question for Coach Savage, you know the number, 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Goodness, there's so many questions, and I don't know where to go. It's going to interest you. Let's say you're sitting in a car, and you're somewhere in Brooklyn, New York, and you're driving past the chair that Anthony Weiner just sat in, and you're listening to W.O. Anthony Weiner just got up from a chair in a cafe. hot dog, I don't know. Probably I usually do it on a one. You know, once, I about three times a year, I poison myself with hot dogs. I was warned against hot dogs when I was a kid by my father, who was not really a food fanatic at all. But he would say to me, how could you eat that garbage? I said, what do you mean? He said, don't you know what's in a hot dog? He said, it's the worst leftovers from a slaughterhouse floor they put into a skin, and they call that a hot dog. So I said, okay, thanks for sharing, Dad. Then he said, I said, how about a pickle? I said, that's a cucumber. No, he said, if you ever went into a pickle factory and you saw the rats running in and out of the barrels, you'll never eat a pickle again. I said, thanks for sharing, Dad. So to this day, I have somewhat of an aversion to hot dogs and pickles. I don't really indulge myself in that.
Savage.
I think I'm going to come up with a new definition of mankind in America, pre-AC and post-AC. I think it's one of the finest definitions of the two types of characters that have evolved in this country. Because if you grow up without air conditioning, you're absolutely hardier and you can put up with a lot of things. But if you grow up like where I need air conditioning, everywhere air conditioning, you can't tolerate any kind of discomfort. And so you say, oh, I'm depressed, I need a medication. I'm this, I need a medication. I got that, I need a medication. That's why you're a cripple. I'm glad my father was tough on me. I'm really glad he made me work young. I'm glad he yelled at me and told me that I'd amount to nothing unless I worked harder. I'm really glad of it. I would raise a child the same exact way. I would. It works. It's actually tried and true in every society on earth. You raise a child a nice way, you know what they wind up? Robert F. Kennedy Jr. You raise a child the nice way, which is you give them the mobile over the crib, and you never yell at them. You never fight with your wife around them within the vicinity. Everything's peace and love. They wind up a junkie at five. Some kind of childhood medication and ailment, which leads to a teenage medication and ailment or ailment and medication, which leads only to a political career and medication. That's the only thing you could wind up is some kind of sap working for the government thinking that you're a genius. There's no, you're not capable of working in the regular world. It's impossible.
Savage.
You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
Sacramento, KSTE country. Eric, what's on your mind, Eric? What's on your mind?
Yeah, I had a question. If you think I should continue to pursue getting back together with my ex, or should I just let it go? That's one question. The second one was, we have a child together, a five-year-old son. Should I continue to try and include her in activities that we do together as a family?
No, wait, I'm really missing something. Include the child from the former marriage? You have a new marriage? Is that what you're saying?
No. I had a girlfriend that we were living together, and we had a child together, and then she kicked me out. And so we had kind of a pseudo-marriage. You know, we were trying to play house.
Right, and I get it. That happens. There's no shame in that. And then, so what's the problem right now?
Well, she didn't want to. She broke up with me about 6 or 7 months ago, and so I moved out. And so we've been, you know, swapping them back and forth. And every now and then, when I see her, we're able to, you know, hang out, the three of us. And,
yeah.
You know, good times, just like it always was. And I say, hey, you know, why don't we get back? You know, I try and say, hey.
All right. So what are you asking? Because you're saying, should you get back with her? The question is, will she get back with you?
Yeah, that's the thing, is I've been kind of pursuing it now for a while, and I just don't know if I should continue to pursue it. Maybe it's, you know.
How old is she? She's a young kid, isn't she? She's in her young 20s?
No, she's 49.
Well, how old are you?
36.
Well, who broke up with who?
She broke up with me.
Why?
To be honest, it was quite out of the blue but I think it was because I kind of stopped paying some of her bills.
Well, has that changed? Has that situation changed? Are you able to support her?
Oh, yeah. I am. Completely, yeah.
All right. So maybe the money situation's different now and she'll see you in a different way.
Yeah, I don't know.
The only answer I can give you is a very, very tangential answer, because I don't know the two people involved, and I don't think it's fair for me to even dwell on this any longer, because without seeing you and her together and asking her what she has to say about it and what the real reasons were for her basically leaving you, I mean, there's no way I can give a reasonable answer, so I'm going to defer on that one. I'm going to punt the ball. Sorry, I cannot help you with that one. Okay? Washington State, Lyle, you're on the Savage Nation topic question, please.
Hey, Dr. Savage. So I'm a 22-year-old college student, and I'm going to be finishing up my undergrad in exercise science here this winter. Yep. And kind of my plan for the last 2 years or so was to go to grad school for occupational therapy. And basically, I just started reading Think and Grow Rich, and it kind of gave me a different perspective on life and how to pursue what I want to do and, you know, make a living. And
What is the actual question? You're not sure you want to go into occupational therapy? You want to do something to make where you can make more money, in essence?
Yeah.
All right. So what's the question to me? You've already made up your mind about what you want to do. So what are you actually asking me?
Well, I know you're a big advocate on the staying in school. And just with times and how hard it is.
Well, I'm not so sure I'm a big advocate of it anymore. I don't know what's waiting for you when you get out. What is it that you envision doing to make your fortune? Let's be clear. You want to make a fortune, correct? And that's perfectly fine. Don't be ashamed of it. I have to hide it. They want to become rich. Why hide it? So you want to take your education and move on to some level where you have a path to make some money, correct?
Correct.
All right. So what are you thinking of doing?
Well, I'll have my undergrad in exercise science, and I'm thinking get my personal trainer degree and do that for just a couple of years.
Well, hold on now. How many personal trainers really make a good living in this country today in a down economy? How many people still have the money to hire someone to come over and teach them how to do push-ups?
Not a lot, but I'm thinking about franchising a gym. But
how can you jump to franchising? You're going to create a chain of gyms?
Well, or just open a Gold's Gym or something along that line.
You mean buy into a franchise?
Yes, that's what I mean.
Have you worked in a gym yet? Have you yet worked in a gym?
Yes, I have.
And you think they're money makers?
I think if you do it right in the right location, you can.
Well, I think a lot of gyms are always looking for new members and new memberships. I don't know how many of them are really profitable. You'd be very, very careful before you put any of your savings or your parents' savings or your loans into a gym without really looking at the profit and loss of that gym and look at the costs and look at the lease. Be very careful before you invest in a small business is all I can say to you, because there are a lot of people trying to unload real turkeys on people.
Savage.
Talk radio is not only not dead, but talk radio is very much alive. Although the midstream media has been claiming for years now that talk radio is dead, that the empty skirts who have been saying that this is a medium only for fringe extremists or old men, that talk radio is only for old men, I've proven them all wrong. Mark Masters, Talk Radio Network, and Michael Savage are partners. We've been in business together since when, 2000? Now, we all hear that the Internet is the king, and a lot of people ran to the Internet with their advertising money. Yet everyone knows that no one's been able to monetize their investment in the Internet. Nobody. You see, talk radio is a medium that you can't hide yourself easily in. You can't hide behind a mustache and such. 3 hours a day, Jerry. 3 hours a day, Jerry. Mr. Mustache on Fox. And unless you have a massive production staff who is talking for you, you're not going to get very far, right? But I don't have a massive staff. I have a very small and very good staff. And when you do talk radio right, people get to know you, people get to understand that you're a real person, and they relate to you. What I'm saying is I've proven that talk radio is a very vibrant medium today. People who listen to talk radio are more acutely aware of what's going on than the average American. Although the fraudulent elites, or shall I say the self-proclaimed drug addicts with microphones and cameras in front of their faces, laugh at you, the average listener to talk radio is far more knowledgeable politically than they would like you to believe. And by the way, listeners to talk radio vote both with their wallets and their ballots. Wisconsin Dave, you're up on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
I have kind of a boating, I guess, lifestyle question. I have three kids, and I'm looking to pick up a boat. They're called ProDrive shallow water boats. It's like a flat boat. They're self-bailing, about a 20-footer, and has an air-cooled motor. And you can get to places like a river or a small lake or even in a marsh or for hunting or fishing.
Sounds good. I'm not even familiar with them. So what's the – you just want to tell us about it, or you want my opinion on it?
No, I guess one of your opinion, you know, it's going to be a few bucks, but – as far as what life lessons do you think, besides just having fun, do the kids, you know, I got the three kids, are they going to be having, learning more than just having a good time on the boat? Like when you took
you go on a waterway, look what you're exposing them to. You're exposing them to, the reason I go out on a boat is not to speed around on a boat. I go very slowly. I like to look at the landforms. I like to look at the light changes. I love to see the kind of birds. You know how many different kinds of birds there are in the waterway that you're in. You could probably get them interested in the waterfowl and the type of fish, the type of other water creatures. There's a lot of zoology going on there, isn't there?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, this is the kind of boat, I guess, we live in Wisconsin. Our Wisconsin River empties into the Mississippi. I guess it even thought of taking a few weeks or a month off and going all the way down to the Gulf, I suppose. I don't know.
How big a boat is this?
Well, it's a 20. The one I was looking at is only a 20-footer. It's a self-bailing, which means that it's got...
Well, but you can't bring that down to the Mississippi, can you?
I don't know. I think it would...
No. Well, you're not going to live on the boat, are you? Not a 20-footer.
No, you'd have to camp out in the evenings and, you know, stop...
I don't know. That's taking on an awful lot, I think. I would limit it to your local area. But as I say, before we depart, there's a lot more to boating than just speeding around and yelling on the water, and it's got to do with the flora and the fauna. Thank you. I mean, I love to go out on a boat and go 5-10 knots, and I look at I like to hear the sound of the water, you know, slapping against the hull of my boat. I like to watch in San Francisco. I mean, you watch the fog coming in or the fog going out. The landforms, we're very lucky because none of the surrounding area here is flat on San Francisco Bay. It's all got beautiful hills, and the hills fall right into the sea. I mean, you could be 30, 40 feet offshore, and you could be in 110 feet of water. Because you're looking at mountaintops here. geologically, you're looking at mountaintops. All the landforms here are mountaintops, which is amazing. Thank God for the last phase of global warming, and we wouldn't have a nice bay. Speaking of which, you know, the other night I opened up a beautiful – I love blueberries. It's one of my favorite fruits. I also know how good they are for you with regard to vision. So I'm eating the blueberries, and I made a joke. I said, jokingly in the kitchen, I said, you know, thank God for global warming or we wouldn't have blueberries. So I said, what do you mean by that? I said, well, think about it. You had an ice age, a mini ice age here on Earth for 300 to 500 years where you couldn't grow blueberries, especially in the Northern Hemisphere. And it was only with the retreating of the ice as a result of global warming, related no doubt not to the Model T Ford, since it occurred in the 1700s, but the global warming occurred primarily because the sun's activity altered. And so with the retreating of the ice, you had a blossoming of agriculture, especially in the Northern Hemisphere. And as a result, you can grow blueberries and other fruit as far north, for God's sake, probably as southern Canada, if not even farther north. So they laughed. I said, don't these idiots understand what they're talking about? They're fighting global warming. What are they arguing for? What would they like, another ice age? Would they like another ice age where food stores dry up because there's no food? They don't even know what they're talking about. Not only is there no man-made global warming, which is not to argue for pollution. I've done more to fight pollution on this earth than all the liberals you might know put together in one place. But let's not distort science to sell a fraud.
Savage.
Now, the bell that is ringing on my desk is not a good humor bell. I know many of you think it is because it's July and it's hot. Reminds you of the ice cream trucks today, pervs driving around. But in my day, you actually bought ice cream. It's a model of the Liberty Bell that a listener sent to me many years ago when I was a local talk show host. And it's interesting when you look at the Liberty Bell. It actually rings. It's actually beautiful. It'll be in my archives. Do you know that the Liberty Bell has a crack in it? Do you know how the crack occurred? The crack occurred during the testing of the bell, the crack in the Liberty Bell. And, of course, the crack in the presidency occurred under Obama. He has cracked the presidency, and no one wants to recognize it. And yet I allege that he has been planted by the same forces that smeared Strauss-Kahn, the same forces that are trying to delay the exoneration of Strauss-Kahn for a few weeks so he cannot run for the presidency of France. I allege that case is bigger than that of the killing of a little girl called Casey Anthony, the mother, you know, allegedly by the mother. And I'm not going to talk about the Casey Anthony case because you're being hoodwinked, you're being deluded, you're being misled. One psychopath in the media started this 2 years ago, and she has infected the entire media, who will not talk about the rape of a nation. They will not talk about the strangling and the rape of a nation by the Socialist Democrat Party USA, SPUSA. And that is why I'm doing my show, because I'm trying to wake you up while we can still be awakened. That's all there is to it.
Savage.
I want to read you a page from Trickle Up Poverty, page 274, bestseller, Obama the Space Cadet, Houston, we have a problem. But I want you to understand something. With the stroke of a pen, he announced his plans to scrap NASA's current space exploration program, and it was done April 15, 2010. He goes to the mecca of space travel and announces with a placid smile on his face that he's about to tear the program apart. And I ask this question, why would Obama destroy NASA? Don't we already have the best aeronautical program in the world? I wrote, we do. Do I need to point out that it's one of the few government programs with direct benefits to the taxpayer? Thanks to NASA's research and development, we now have a list of inventions that enhance and protect our lives. Among them is the TV satellite dish, fail-safe flashlights with system redundancy, shock-absorbing helmets for sports and biking enthusiasts, edible toothpaste, space pens that can be used to write upside down, cordless tools originally developed to help Apollo astronauts drill for moon samples, smoke detectors first used in the Skylab space station, ear thermometers that don't use mercury, and joystick controllers created for the Apollo lunar rover. These are some of the inventions. So I wrote, why does Obama the Space Cadet want to fix what isn't broken? Well, that's the question of the day. The question has no answer for it. Something is wrong with this entire picture. And I'd like to know how one man can sabotage what took 60 years to create. Okay? Florida, Ben, you're on the Savage Nation.
Hi, Mark. How are you? Just had a quick comment regarding the space program here. I live in Cocoa Beach, Florida, and just wanted to point out that, you know, the shuttle was a 40-year-old technology that needed to be replaced. We are hopeful that commercial ventures are starting. We've got a commercial for actually 13 scheduled launches. Only two of those were shuttle launches this year. So we're optimistic about
when you're saying we, who's the Imperial we that you are referring to?
We, the residents of Brevard County.
We are 10,000. Well, first of all, that's a big if. You're hoping. What are you basing your hope upon?
That the private sector will be able to run it more efficiently and produce.
Really? How come that Obama hasn't turned the post office over to the private sector? Why did he choose NASA?
Well, they probably should. The post office is probably not going to make it work.
So, in other words, if you want to privatize a governmental agency, why begin with something related to our national security instead of the postal service?
I would prefer to privatize the space industry, yes. That's my opinion.
You would prefer. So you think that a private enterprise would have gotten us to the moon faster than the government did?
In the current state where we are, the way things are not working in Washington, I think the private sector would do a better job.
Well, how about privatizing the U.S. military? It's a very inefficient organization. By your logic, we should privatize the entire military. Ben, I know we've had our problems, Ben. Can't we work this out? Ben, where did you go, Ben? Ben, all I said was, why can't we privatize the military, Ben?
I know everything hasn't been quite right with me, but I can assure you now, very confidently, that it's going to be all right again.
I realize you're calling from the government itself, Ben, to try to brainwash the people. Ben, please don't do that.
Ben, we can work it out, Ben. Daisy, Daisy.
Daisy, Daisy. Give me your answer.
See, it really should have come from the other side. Now, there was a planted call from the government. Listening to the Savage Nation, they have agents all over the country who act like Ben from Florida or Hal from Brooklyn or Schmendrick from Texas, all different accents, all on a government payroll, and they call radio shows with the government propaganda. Couldn't answer the question because it wasn't on his sheet. I used his logic, and he got tripped up by his own logic. He said that the government could do it better. I mean, individual private enterprise could do it better than the government. So I said, why not privatize the post office? He said, they should. So I said, why didn't he start with the post office instead of something related to national security? No answer. And then I challenged him. I said, why don't we just privatize the U.S. military? Blank. 1-800-449-8255. Any topic is fair game, except Casey Anthony. I will not talk about it. There are much bigger issues, such as the rape of a nation, the death of the military, the death of NASA, the death of freedom, the communist tyrant in the White House, the noose he's put around your neck. I will not talk about this case because it's a pure media distraction, and I will not. I don't understand how you could even be interested in it. I don't understand it. Maybe it's something within me. I do not comprehend how a nation could have such mass hysteria like this over a case that, of course, it's a human life. Are you going to allege this is the only case of a child killed by a mother? I could not imagine my not being on the radio. Because I don't know who would fill my role. I don't know anyone who could fill my role. No one can.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now,
America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
Yes, see, see, rider, girl, see what you has done. Yes, yes, yes.
This morning on the way to the theater, that's an old joke, but something funny did not happen to me on the way to the theater. Something beautiful happened to me on the way to the theater is because I took a detour and I went to the Palace of the Legion of Honor Museum in San Francisco. Little did I know the Golden Gate Bridge would be jammed with tourists driving to and fro to go to the turnaround and look down into the fog and then turn around and go back to the city and drive up the crookedest street in town, sitting in traffic endlessly to get to the fog-ridden hill and look down into the fog and see nothing, and then go down to Fisherman's Wharf and stuff their faces on bad seafood and not know where they were but take pictures to show to nobody when they got back to the third world country that they came from. And so I stopped at the Palace of the Legion of Honor, and I saw some, I always go to see the Rodin collection because it's the finest Rodin collection outside of France, and I'm a lover of sculpture, and I never get tired of it. I don't go every day. I mean, I'm not a fanatic, but you know, it lifted me up because my mind was getting warped by the media, and I couldn't take it anymore. I mean, when I turn on the pompous limbo, and even he's talking about it in the midst of his iced tea escapades, and then I hear the shrill wall banger talking about it, I said, boy, we're ruined as a nation. When the peacocks are now sounding like chickens, I know we're in trouble. When the alleged whales of the conservative media are sounding like guppies, when the exotic beasts have become nothing but, oh, well, you get the picture. So I go in the museum. It's a Roman mosaic that was discovered when they were building something in Israel a couple of years ago. And they found this only 3 feet below the surface. And they stopped construction and they saved it. And here it is on exhibit in San Francisco in the Legion of Honor. Sprawling, exquisitely preserved Roman mosaic dating 1,700 years ago. A Roman mosaic from Lod, Israel. And the tableau, which is unbelievable, unearthed from the Israeli city of Lod during an excavation in 1996, and it was recently removed from its site for conservation, and now it's on loan to the Legion of Honor from Israel. The mosaic itself is 1,700 years old. It just shows you how the rich lived in those days. The mosaic is very interesting unto itself. You're concerned about losing your hair. You're concerned about not running as fast as you did 2 years ago. You're concerned about that extra inch on your waist from July 4th, and you're wondering who's going to cry when you die.
Savage.
You know, it's interesting to me that none of the politicians talk about any of the social issues that plague the rest of us. Think about it. Sure, the economy is king. We understand that. If you don't have a job and you can't support yourself and your family, the rest doesn't matter. But whatever happened to leadership? Whatever happened to authority figures discussing moral issues such as we are discussing today on the Savage Nation? And it's an interesting cultural observation unto itself that it has fallen upon some of us in the media to take up the mantle of discussing issues that really matter to families in America, such as, should drugs be decriminalized or legalized? Should prostitution be decriminalized or legalized? This is the issue that we're talking about right now. I stumbled upon it. I didn't plan on talking about it. But we're very deeply discussing it on the Savage Nation. I want to challenge you right now because you're going to be shocked by this. I just found something that I thought was immensely interesting. We're going to read to you the percentage of men by country who paid for sex at least once. In other words, male clients or johns of prostitutes worldwide from 21 studies conducted between 1994 and 2010. Okay? And they included only 15 countries for which they found data of men paying for sex at least once in their lifetimes. Which country, before I read this list, would you think is the highest in the use of prostitutes and the lowest? Well, what's the point of answering? Don't call me. but you're going to be shocked by the answer. Again, it's not a very scientific study, but it's certainly a starting point. The number one country for the use, or let us put it to this way, for men who paid for sex at least once, the John's chart, Cambodia, 80% of men have gone to prostitutes at least once. Thailand, 75% of men have gone to prostitutes at least once in their lifetime. Italy, 45% of men have gone to prostitutes at least once. Spain, 39% of men. Japan, 37% of men. The Netherlands, 21% of men. The United States, 20% of men. China, 20% of men. Switzerland, 19%. France, 16%. Australia, 15%. Sweden, 13%. Finland, 13%. Norway, 12% of men. And strangely enough, the United Kingdom, only 8.8% of men admit to having gone to prostitutes at least once in their life. I guess that's because they're not interested in women to begin with, so it's at the very, very bottom of the chart. And I suppose the reason in Norway that the number of men who go to prostitutes is so low is because they're so high on drugs, they don't even want to go to women at all. And then if you look at the chart the other way, Cambodia and Thailand being at the top of the chart, it seems to be endemic or a part of their society to use women in this manner. Cambodian men are quite ready to admit that they seek the favors of prostitutes, even though they may be married and have two or three girlfriends on the side. It's part of their life. That's according to Leela Barak in Business Times magazine. Thailand. Do I have to talk about Thailand? I mean, but I'm curious about the bottom of the list, which is the United Kingdom. The number of men paying women for sex being the lowest of this group. It's very interesting. Now, the rate of divorce has increased in England, as has the proportion of men who were never or previously married. And this may explain some of the increased demand for commercial sex. But nevertheless, I think the women and their lack of morality in England, by and large, is also somewhat accounting for the low rate of men who go to prostitutes. They don't have to, since so many of the women are acting like prostitutes, in plain English.
Savage.
You know, one of the things I specialize in is not mincing words. And when you have a society like the United Kingdom where the women basically are all, the younger ones act like prostitutes, which is no different than many, many regions of America. We don't have to spell it out and become graphic and make burlesque-like jokes here. But you know that the Hollywood establishment is pushing the image of women being like men. You know, if it feels good, do it. Why not do it in the road? And many of us are disgusted by this behavior. It also accounts for the fact that the Caucasians amongst us have the lowest birth rate in the United States of America amongst all races. And that is because the women don't want to have babies. They just want to have fun. So let's get back to the main issue. And let's take your calls right here on the Savage Nation. Alice, in New York on WOR, where do you stand? Are you for or against legalizing prostitution?
A gray area. I'm for it to be legalized and regulated. Why? Well, it's like you said before with the disease. I mean, if you look back through history, during the Civil War, a lot of these guys were going out away from home for the first time seeing prostitutes, and the generals were having a big problem because they were losing a quarter of their guys to all the various venereal diseases of the day, you know, before they even got out on the battlefield. And their solution for it was to legalize it and regulate it. And that's what they did, and they saw an immediate drop in disease. You know, they had the prostitutes. They would have to go get a license for prostitution, go to a doctor and get checked.
Well, but here, look, there's certainly an argument to be made for that. But as I mentioned to you earlier, just because they go to a doctor doesn't mean that the next man to be with them is going to be disease-free and not pass, and she's not going to pass it on to the third man, the second man after him.
Oh, well, no, absolutely not. But I'm saying it reduces the chances, you know? I mean, and like you said before, of course, if they're diagnosed, are they going to stop working? Probably not. That's their bread and butter.
No, I hear you, and I'm not trying to be, kind of naive about any of this either. Are you yourself at all familiar with this practice?
Not really.
But no, I'm trying to find out if you're in the biz.
Yeah, it's, you know, people are going to do it anyways. You know, it is the world's oldest profession. And if people are going to do it anyways...
Well, sure, and if they get caught, they wind up on CNN. What could be better?
Well, yeah, well, it could be good or it could be bad, you know?
All right. Well, all right. We don't have to make any juvenile jokes about it, but it's an interesting discussion, and we haven't yet heard from the other side to the extent that I'd like to hear from the other side, whereas it's saying it should not be legalized from the moral point of view, from the family point of view. So let's go to Patricia in Arizona, who takes that side. Go ahead, Patricia.
Yeah, I just, is this going to be one of our daughter's career choices?
If you turn on HBO, it makes it look like it's a choice between becoming a lawyer or a prostitute and working in a cat house.
There's a lot. I work in a school. There's a lot of messed up kids in this world. And is this going to be something that is going to allow our sons to keep abusing our daughters and our daughters just taking that? I don't understand how people can want to do that. One of my first jobs was, I didn't work in a fast food restaurant. I worked in a brothel. It's ridiculous. It's really ridiculous.
Well, here's the problem. I don't even think we'd be having this discussion if America wasn't melting down into a third world nation right in front of our eyes. In other words, if we didn't have the debasement of our society, promulgated by so many different forces, and I don't have to name them for us to know who we're talking about, I don't think we'd even be talking about it. 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, we wouldn't be having this discussion. But because we have been debased to the point that we are debased, take a look at the White House. Take a look at how the two occupants of the White House have trashed the White House, debased the presidency itself, abused the presidency. That is why we're even talking about legalizing prostitution, pros and cons. It's because we are very much like a third world nation on a moral level right now. There's no question about that. Texas, Matt, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hey, hi, Dr. Savage. Yes, I'm against it. And you can talk about disease. You can talk about everything. But what it really boils down to is a person seeks someone outside of their marriage because they're not capable of being intimate. And they get a false sense of intimacy when they seek out a prostitute or someone outside their marriage. Now, it's not always the guy's fault. It takes two.
But you're saying outside the marriage. What if the man is single and cannot meet a woman? Or what if the man is single and doesn't have the time to go dating? Or what if the man is single and is afraid to date someone for fear that she's crazy or out stalking him and he just wants to use someone to relieve him? I mean, I'm laying it online here as though this is a clinical discussion. I'm not taking that side. How do you answer that point of view?
That's fair. For a guy that's single, I'm not saying legalize it. If that's what he chooses to do, that's his choice. Go ahead and do it. But you're still going to lack the ability to be intimate, and it takes work. I mean, if you look at intimacy between a man and a woman, that's probably the highest form of intimacy that man has been created with and can enjoy on this earth, and it takes work. Okay?
Now, let's talk about this from a perspective that a child could understand, because many children listen to the show. How do you define intimacy?
Being able to share anything about yourself that you're afraid that other people might think you're the normal or unusual, and when you're
and bringing that into the sexual arena with a in a marital setting, for example.
Okay, son, your dad and mom love one another a lot, and one of the highest forms of love that we express to each other is when we close our door at night and we make love to one another. And it's a very special time. It's the most special time that I have with my wife, whom I pledged my love to years ago at the altar of marriage. And I want you to ask me anything at any time as to how that works so that you can treat your wife the same. Michael, I went outside my marriage, and I lived in sexual sin for a long time. And I went for 7 months to a place to help me learn to be intimate, and I know it's work.
Well, you know, God bless the people from Texas. I mean, you're a straight-up guy, and you laid out a scenario right now that's not commonly discussed. I've never heard it put that way, Matt. You've been through something there to have come out so clear on this.
It's intimacy. It really is. And I mean, I can ask all your listeners to think about the person or persons with whom they feel closest to, and they are the ones that have let their guard down and shared a secret of whatever kind it is, and that's a form of intimacy. And the highest form is when you take off your clothes and you love on your loved one, and she loves on you, and at the end you're both smiling and you're happy, and there's no judgment, and there's pure contentment between the both of you, and that is worth the work.
All right, man, you really made a heck of a speech right there. I think you've changed a lot of lives. I appreciate you calling the show. I never thought we'd get this seriously into this, but hey, God bless that gentleman from Texas who really knows what he's talking about. It's something that you don't joke about. I think that, you know, we grew up in a society, all of us, and we still have it, where sex is considered a ha-ha and a joke. Is it a joke? Should sex be a joke? What is sex? Is sex just a release? Is sex the most divine experience between people? Or are we overly concerned with sex and we should just, like, walk away from it already? Is it too much?
Savage.
Talk radio is not a dying medium. It is stronger than ever. It is stronger than it's ever been before. In my 16 years in radio, Mark Masters, who has syndicated me for over 9 years now, and we're going to be, as Harry Truman said, give him you-know-what for the next couple of years. That's our job. Our job is to be watchdogs, not to be lapdogs, Mark. And I want to thank you for giving me total and absolute freedom to do so. That's the point I'm trying to make. I wouldn't have lasted a week with another syndicator. I could never have sat down after a show and been deconstructed where they say, well, you said this, tomorrow don't say that. That would have been the end of it for me. I've had total freedom. I need total freedom to function. And Mark, I want to thank you again. I'm glad we're going to be working together. And I know the American people, who particularly the millions and millions of people who listen to this show, are going to breathe a sigh of relief that we have this year to look forward to together. It's had its ups and downs. But right now, we have seen the talk radio and the Savage Nation are responsible for the mighty blow that is being struck against socialism in America. And I believe this will grow when it forces the Democrats off the political landscape.
Savage.
You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
Elizabeth in Florida, your position is up next on the Savage Nation. Go ahead.
I love what Matt said, but most hookers or and so that's more the reality than what Matt's talking about. It's a nice idea. It is.
No way. But Matt was talking about being intimate with a wife, not with a prostitute.
Right. But I'm saying in reality, it's more of the latter, more of the kind of unintimate. But as far as the intimacy.
Wait. You mean in marriage, it's more like the masturbation, or in all interactions?
No, most prostitutes refer
to... Yeah, we don't have to repeat it. I get it. Most prostitutes are used basically in that manner as just... they're abused, in other words. There's no intimacy.
They're like a human toilet. But anyways...
Ugh.
It'll never be made legal in this country, because even if you throw out all the morals, 70% of all strippers were the victims of molestation as children. And like, it goes up to 98% for actual streetwalkers. You got the disease. You got drug trafficking that goes.
Is that why they go into it? Because they were molested or abused, and they were traumatized, and they're still trying to appeal to daddy? I mean, is that it?
Isn't the psychology that what we learn as children is just stays with us, even the sick stuff? And the child sex trafficking is huge. It's growing in Dallas, Fort Worth, Atlanta.
Wait, I missed that. The child sex trafficking?
Well, child sex trafficking, you know, the base of the sex industry, I think, is always...
In where? In Dallas, Fort Worth, what? In they're bringing in young Mexican kids?
No, I just... child sex trafficking, that's like one of the hubs, Dallas, Fort Worth area.
But where are the girls from? Where are they coming in? Where are they bringing them in? What country?
Well, I don't know about that. I know that some stats are like 100,000 girls are even kidnapped a year and forced into child sex trafficking. They had a 2010 at, I think, Diamond's Cabaret in Texas. They had a 12-year-old girl working as a stripper. It's pretty sick. But you cannot ever, even if you throw out morals, just the base of prostitution, everything.
Well, it's also related to no men in the families. 50% of the marriages are single parents. They're women trying to raise children and work. The children are left alone a lot, and they're very vulnerable to this kind of thing. If there was a man around watching the house, I don't think you'd have as much child sex trafficking. You'd have a lot more dead people trying to touch children.
And basically, you know, parents have given up educating their children. I mean, I could very quickly educate any young girl so she would never be a stripper if she knew what those girls really endured in those clubs. Or really, if guys go into a strip club and that's a place where no one can hear you scream when there's so many things guys that are drunk and unruly and sexually charged they do to those women. And you just don't hear about it because it's kind of like the sisterhood of we're so cool and we're so hot when they know they're not. And they, you know, mm-hmm. They don't marry. They don't have husbands who are
Elizabeth. This again. I'm not trying to pry into your life, but how are you so knowledgeable about this world?
Oh, I'm really good at it. I mean, I've studied a lot of it. I'm not one, but I worked around certain areas like that, and also worked as a young girl around the racetrack with tons of owners and people with a lot of money. And you wouldn't believe how many times I was propositioned, even from an incredibly young age. So kind of knew that, and I've worked around, worked for madams taking care of horses and things. If you believe it or not.
But, you said horses, didn't you?
Yeah, and the funniest thing in the world is if you want to see a guy turned on, it's just you're 16 years old, you're taking care of his expensive horse, and he's standing there watching you do it. I know it's kind of a sick kind of thing. That's a race.
Well, now we're getting into another realm altogether. But so you have memories of the other world around your world. Of you were taking care of horses, and they were taking care of something else that sounded like horses.
No, I'm just saying, you know, where there's wealth and money and girls around, you're going to have that. But the process.
Well, wait, hold on. We just said that the highest rate of prostitution in the world, or at least the number of men who frequent prostitutes, is in Cambodia, which is a poor country. So I would think that you could say that the exploitation of women is not limited to the rich.
Right, you could say that, but also in Thailand, I believe they recently made oral sex not even considered sex. I mean,
did Bill Clinton was Bill Clinton the consultant on that, or
Bill Clinton?
He must have been a special counsel to the commission on that. I'm so glad that I could be the referee for the United States of America on such heady issues, such as we are discussing tonight on this program, because we certainly don't hear it coming from the politicians. All they do is talk about the same garbage. Most of us are turned off from the political process. There's no leadership. I mean, you know, if you want to be a leader, then lead. Lead, lead, lead. Talk about issues that matter to the people other than issues such as the economy, which are number one in some ways. But is it number one? I mean, what does it profiteth a man if he gaineth the world and loseth his soul? Do you remember that statement? What a good, of all the riches in the world, if you end up like George Soros, a man without a soul, in my opinion. A soulless ghoul. That no matter how much money that man has, it's not enough for him because he wants more power over the people. That's an example of what Jesus was talking about. What does it profiteth a man if he gaineth the world and loseth his soul? So, yeah, the economy is real important. We know that. But is it the only thing? Is it all there is the dollar? Well, then if that's all there is, then get ready for Cambodia, USA. With 13-year-old and 8-year-old and 7-year-old girls as prostitutes, and you're going to look the other way and say, well, it's only a business. Is that what you're going to say? It's only a business? Well, it gives the poor child some income. That's what you're going to argue? Chicago, Ann, welcome to the Savage Nation on the prostitution issue. Go ahead, please.
Hi, how are you? I was a prostitute at one time.
Right, and so where do you stand, legal or not legal?
Don't legalize it now, no. It's
why?
Not good. It's the girls nowadays are not like it used to be. They're very dirty. They'll hurt you, and some of them are so, like you were talking, they're so young. You know, it breaks my heart now knowing what I know, and I feel sorry for them.
So you worked in the golden age of prostitution,
right? Well, in the late 70s, mid 80s.
I can't comment because I don't know what the difference between then and now is. I don't quite understand the difference. It was always a harsh world, so far as I know. But I'm glad we had this discussion, Ann, and I think we should continue it right here in the Savage Nation. Which side are you on? Should prostitution be legalized, decriminalized, or should it remain illegal and become illegal even in Nevada?
Savage.
Hi, allege that we have a communist tyrant in the White House. At this point, he's a rather benign communist tyrant. Not all communists are to the extreme of Joseph Stalin or Mao Zedong or Pol Pot. There's an entire spectrum of communists. Some are benign socialists, and he's clearly a communist, and he's clearly tyrannical, and he's getting away with it because the media does not call him on it. I allege that. Many of you don't agree, or some of you don't agree. Some of you do agree, but I will not talk about the Casey Anthony case. I won't do it. Just won't do it. Bigger problem is the death of a nation. North Carolina, Mike, welcome to the Savage Nation.
I definitely don't want to talk about Casey Anthony either. I do want to talk about President Obama. You refer to him as a communist, but President Obama fails the test of communism on many ways, one of which is he's been extremely good to the biggest capitalists of all. For example,
well, hold, let's stop right here. If you want me to get specific, he's a Leninist, which is a little different than the generic term communist, and I spell it out in my book, Trickle Up Poverty. Are you aware, this is a very important topic, what you just raised. It's very important, and it's not easily understood. There was a certain Austrian gentleman who took over Germany. His name was Adolf Hitler. He was a National Socialist. You know who I'm talking about, correct?
I do.
Are you aware that he also cozied up to capitalists in order to maintain his power his power position in Germany, and that he was at great odds with his pure socialist friends in the SA, mainly Ernst Röhm, who opposed him? Because he said Ernst Röhm was one of the street thugs who fought with him from the time he was an unknown German agitator or community organizer. And once he gained power, Hitler had to maintain his power, and he could only do so by maintaining contracts and good relations with the huge industrialists such as the Krupps and others. And the pure socialists within his movement objected to his relationships with the capitalists. And as a result, he had the SS kill the SA. That's a separate story, the Night of the Long Knives. So it's very common for young communists or new communist leaders to be a hybrid. He's certainly not where he wants to be eventually with his total state control of everything.
Well, the thing is, a communist, one of the basics of communism would be that they want to nationalize, they want the state to own the means of production. Now, given the recent financial crisis, it would have been very easy for President Obama to largely nationalize the financial industry. He could have used that opportunity. The financial industry was in a bad way.
He has nationalized the auto industry. He seized control of GM and Chrysler. That's a fact, isn't it?
But that's small potatoes compared.
It's certainly not small potatoes when General Motors was once the largest auto company on earth. He wiped out private investments of millions of Americans, and he transferred the power and money of the automakers to the unions that support Obama. And at the same time, he has solicited money from the very same Wall Street fat cats who wrecked the economy. So that's one example of nationalization. Of course, I'm not arguing that he's nationalized all industries. He's not Chavez. But remember, this is done by increment. It's not done overnight.
But he didn't go after the big ones. And even in the case of Chrysler and in the case of GM, those are being sold back to the public, probably back to those bankers.
Then let me give you another example of his communism. He seized control of the student loan industry, and he went to war with private colleges. Buried in the fine print of Obamacare is a sweeping measure that takes over all private lending for student loans, which will force all students into a government-run program. That is certainly nationalization.
Which happened to save the federal government billions of dollars. It made sense from a public policy perspective to do
well,
that.
Well, communism can be very, very efficient also. You know, when you seize industry that you didn't build, that's a very, very profitable venture.
Well, so can fascism. Fascism can be extremely profitable.
Well, how can you distinguish between fascism and communism when Hitler and Stalin were twins?
Well, now, Hitler, you have to remember the thing with Hitler. You did make reference to Hitler earlier.
I just made another statement. Of course we're opposed to fascism and we're opposed to communism. At least I am. I don't know if you are. But you're not going to argue that Hitler and Stalin were very different, would you?
Yeah, well, here's the distinction. Hitler was the National Socialist Party. That's Nazi is what that stands for. And
I just said that. Wait a minute. Don't make yourself sound intelligent. I just said National Socialism. So now you're trying to play professor with me. Tell us something we don't know.
Okay. All right, well, here's what I'm going to tell you. Hitler's primary platform was anti-communist. That he was running against. The socialists were different than the communists.
And tell me what Stalin's platform was.
Well, Stalin's platform. Now, Stalin's platform. Now, here we get into some fine points here. Stalin was, I would consider him a communist. Now, on the other hand, Stalin was also a totalitarian communist, which makes it even much worse. So, but Hitler was definitely not a Stalinist.
Now, well, he wasn't. Of course, he wasn't a Stalinist. There was two dictators fighting for world power, but they were really no different to the person in the street. It was the same kind of fascism at the end of the day. I'll give you something to ponder this evening. Do you know the origin of the word fascist?
Let me hear it. No, actually, I don't know it. Tell me.
All right. At least you're willing to admit that you don't know something. And when you hear what the definition of the word fascist is, you'll see there's very little difference between a totalitarian socialist and a totalitarian Nazi. At the end of the day, they're the same thing. A fascist, it comes from the fascia, the sticks that the Romans used, and the sticks that were on the Roman shield to enforce their or impose their will upon the people. In other words, they used force in plain English. Fascist means state force. That's all it really means. And so, therefore, I would argue that Stalin and Hitler were the same with regard to the average person, with reference to the average person. It made no difference whether it was National Socialism or whether it was Soviet Socialism. It was enforced with police power. With fascism.
Of course it was. Of course it was enforced with police power, as is capitalism, for that matter. But the thing...
Well, now, you're going to say that we're living in the same tyranny as under Hitler and Stalin?
Of course not. Of course it's not the same, but there are similarities between systems.
Of course, there's. Everything is similar. In some regard, a chicken is similar to a man, or a chimpanzee is similar to a man with regard to 98% of his DNA, but it doesn't mean we're the same.
Absolutely, I agree with you. The difference between one of the key differences between Hitler and Stalin was that Hitler had his Albert Speer. He had his private industry people that he elevated, as fascists would do. It's a form of.
I am arguing that Obama is a tyrant and that he's a Marxist, and specifically a Leninist. His tyrannical Justice Department has run over the rights and liberties of Americans from the day this man took over the Justice Department. You cannot argue that Eric Holder is a man of the people, would you?
Well, what is your definition of a man of the people?
How about his Project Gunrunner? Do you know anything about the Justice Department's Project Gunrunner?
I am not familiar with Project Gunrunner.
Well, that's because your mind is on what the media tells you. He forced legal gun dealers to illegally sell guns to Mexican drug kingpins in the idea that these guns would be used to carry out murders in the U.S. and provoke public opinion into demanding unconstitutional gun control. But the fact of the matter is this backfired on Obama because the guns that were sent to the Mexican drug dealers, U.S. manufactured guns sent by the ATF, it's a monster scandal. And it's being buried by the media that's making you look at the Casey Anthony case.
And you believe that Eric Holder knowingly, consciously, and deliberately sold weapons to the Mexican drug mafia in order, knowing that they would kill Americans. That's what you believe.
Well, right now it's being investigated by a congressional panel who alleges that that's what went on. We do know that the guns were used to carry out murders in the United States. You don't even know what the case is, so I don't think you can argue with me.
No,
But this case is a very big embarrassment for Eric Holder because it was his Justice Department who, frankly, was behind the TSA and did not control this.
Well, there are what we call unintended consequences. Now, as you yourself have said, in America, people are innocent until proven guilty. I don't believe that Eric Holder deliberately intended to kill Americans. As another example, remember, it was the CIA that trained Osama bin Laden. Now, that ended up bringing...
Now you're going back. Why don't you blame Nixon for all the problems in the world? I am talking about an ongoing scandal that the American media is covering up because they work for Obama and Mrs. Obama. How about the tyranny of Michelle Obama and the abuse of the taxpayers' money? You're not going to argue that's something that's very pretty to look at, is it?
Well, get specific. What are you talking about?
Well, if you don't know her abuse of the American taxpayer, I can't help you. How about her recent trip to Africa? You thought that was a useful use of taxpayer funds?
Well, you referred to her mother-in-law living in the White House. I never knew it was such a bad thing for someone's mother-in-law to live with them, particularly when they both have busy jobs.
Have you heard of a president in the past who had a mother-in-law living in the White House?
I can't say that I have studied that topic.
Okay. And do you think that all the trips of Michelle and her abuse of the taxpayers' hard-earned tax dollars on her many junkets and trips, which are pure vacations, is something that's admirable. I don't think that even you, whatever your political orientation may be, would approve of that.
Well, the thing is, what I noticed...
When she went to Spain last spring with her daughters, do you know that she took an entourage that took over an entire 500-room hotel in Madrid at taxpayer expense? Do you have any idea what kind of bills this woman is running up? How about her 40 personal assistants? Does that bother you at all?
What I know is that the president's wives, and I refer to Laura Bush, and I refer to Nancy Reagan, and I refer to Mrs. Bush, what was her name, the one of the elder Bush, they all seem to take official trips acting in some capacity on some good cause. I think in Michelle...
Yes, but not quite as many, nor with as many aides, nor as big an entourage.
Well,
for example, so far as I know, previous first ladies had one personal assistant on the public dime, while this first lady has 40 such assistants catering to her every whim. It's shocking that she gets away with it, but again, it goes to the primary point that I'm making, which is that they're acting like communist tyrants. This is exactly how communists operate. They operate above the law. They give you the rubbish that they're for the people, but in fact, they're living more royally than any president has ever lived. It's the same way the Politburo people lived in the ex-Soviet Union. They gave the rubbish to the people that we're going to help you, we're for you, we're for the average person, and they all had the country homes, they had the chauffeured cars. It's exactly what went on under the regime of under the Soviet regime.
I am not particularly comfortable with that. However, I would not say that this rises to the level of something that we need to lose sleep over at night. I mean,
about the 32 unconstitutional czars that are still operating? Nobody voted for them. How do you feel about czars in the White House controlling large swaths of the U.S. economy, from automakers to oil producers to retirement funds to marital relations? His pay czar